Welcome back. I am Paula Gordon, Bill Russell, and I are talking with Congressman John Lewis. A great deal of your life is important because of where you've been and your past and the story you have to tell about America. An equally important part of your life is where we are and where we are going. You tell a wonderful story about visiting with your friend Bernard Lafayette, who after 30 years has gone back to lead the college, which you both attended in Nashville when you were very young. And you have this touching moment when you say, I don't know if I could do that. That is really hard, what Bernard Lafayette is doing now, leading a small college against great challenges, and he's not in the spotlight, and he's... That's a really remarkable statement to me that I don't know if I, John Lewis, who as far as I'm concerned has hung the moon and probably could do it again, that what Bernard Lafayette is doing is hard.
It is very hard. I think it's very difficult.
Harder than when you two were standing up to the physical abuses we had to see to change America?
I think it was easier to march, to sit in, to go on the freedom ride, to face the billy clubs, the bull whips, the tear gas, then to go out and every day, day in and day out, you don't know whether you're going to get the next grant from, to beg for money, to support a small college. It's hard and difficult to be a college president. I see college presidents, school administrators come in my office almost every day saying, help us, we need this, we need that. It is tough.
So we don't necessarily have to do the hard work by being out in the physical spaces. There's hard work to be done everywhere?
There's very difficult work to be done everywhere. One group of people, I don't think we said thanks to enough, public school teachers. Sometimes I say every public school teacher should be nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize just for maintaining order and discipline. We should say thank you. We don't say thank you to law enforcement people. Each time they put on a uniform and step out, they're taking a great risk. It's hard work. Rearing a family. I don't understand how my mother and father made it. I don't understand it.
Well, then it's worth my asking. Your mother and father, as you described your childhood in the rural South Alabama, it could have been any time in the last 3,000 years in any farming community, agricultural community, where people were just barely getting by.
Any place, any place in America, or maybe any place in the world. And you see people that still problems all over the world, not just in America, where people are struggling day in and day out just to survive, just to make it. I don't understand it. And too many people today said, we don't have this, we don't have that. And my mother kept saying, make do. We have to make do.
Your mother also treated work as a sacrament, you say.
Yeah. She said over and over again, hard work never killed anyone. I sometimes wanted to debate her on that question.
It was the part about picking cotton, wasn't it?
It was the hoeing.
The chopping.
Chopping cotton and pulling corn and shaking peanut. It was not easy. But she kept saying, work, that you got to work for what you get. Work.
I'd like to go back to the spirit of, or maybe forward to the spirit of history, and the notion of preparation. It seems there was a curious confluence of events that occurred in the late 50s and early 60s. Gandhi's influence, Jim Lawson runs into Martin Luther King at Oberlin College, comes to Nashville, David Halberstam happens to be in Nashville, some kids in Greensboro behave badly. I mean, you can't script this.
So much but, for strategic plan.
But you can be prepared to exploit it. The movement sort of ran out in the late 60s. 1968 was a terrible year. And I think a lot of people would like to recreate the feel of that. But also, I think a lot of people have a sense that there is a need for that. Can we force it, or is the best we can do just be prepared?
I don't think we can force it. I think we can be prepared. I think we must be prepared for the moment. But you never know. You never know when that moment. And some people call it, you know, lightning striking. No, I believe the spirit of history will strike somebody down or some group down at the right moment, at the right time. No one selected Rosa Parks. No one selected the city of Selma. Maybe Selma selected itself. And when, I think we have to be prepared.
Yeah, and when the spirit shows up, you don't say, come back next week?
No, no.
Not an option?
You cannot say that. There's an old song that we used to sing. I'm going to do what the spirit said do. If the spirit said march, I'm going to march. If the spirit said walk, I'm going to walk. If the spirit said sit in, I'm going to sit in. I'm going to be guided by the spirit.
And what must we be doing now to be prepared for this?
I think we have to prepare. We have to be prepared as individuals. But we have to be prepared as a community, as a people, as a nation, as a world community. The time must come. All across this planet we call spaceship Earth, when we have the courage to say enough is enough, that somehow in some way we're going to be a little more humane. We're going to be a little more peaceful. We're going to share our resources with the rest of the world. It makes me very sad when I see us spend more money, more of our limited resources, on more bombs, more missiles, and more guns. When there's hungry, when there's poverty, when there's disease, that we can use these resources to help do away with hunger and poverty and heal some of the ills of humankind.
There's another resource. We tend to think of ethnic differences, racial differences, as a challenge, as a problem. And it would seem to me that it is also a resource, that having access to people who do not see the world exactly as I see it can have utility. And they don't necessarily have to be a different color. They can be a different gender. They can be from a different country. They can be from a different culture. They can go to a different church. But that there is an opportunity that is available in the discussion that tends to want to center around race. And rather than deploring it...
Well, we shouldn't be afraid of diversity. We shouldn't fear. We should embrace diversity. We should embrace humanity. We should embrace... I've had an opportunity. I've been very lucky. But more than lucky, I've been very blessed. As a congressperson, as a participant in the civil rights movement, provided me with the opportunity to travel and see the rest of the world, to Europe. I've gone into the Kremlin long ago and had an opportunity to meet with members of the Supreme Soviet, to South Africa before it was free and independent, to talk and meet with different factions and other parts of the world. And when you really look at it, we all are one. We all are the same. And it shouldn't be that difficult.
I have the sense that we allow our experience to be mediated by television, by newspapers, radio. what I'm hearing you say is that there's something to be said for just getting out and mixing it up with people who are not just like us.
It is very important to get out there and mix it up, to get out and travel.
And it's okay to disagree.
Disagree. You can, you
but
know,
engage.
In a family, you disagree. But you don't run off. You don't create chaos. You try to create community. You reconcile the differences. We should be engaged. We don't withdraw and say we're going to leave the planet. We're not going any place. This is the only one we know.
And even if we did have that spigot for an exit, the embracing those differences, the celebrating even those differences.
That's a better way to put it. Celebration. Celebrating the differences. Celebrating diversity. I think it makes us all better people, better human beings.
I don't want to go away from this thought without talking about the fact that over and again, you turn to song, you turn to laughter in the movement. This wasn't all just grim, that there was joy in this as well as pain and suffering. Is that right?
We did sing a great deal, but I cannot carry a tune.
We
did sing a great deal.
That doesn't seem to matter, does it?
No, but because I went along, I tried to sing, and I had the ability to hum a little.
Isn't there joy in this?
There's a lot of joy. It's a lot of joy, and it created a sense of solidarity and a sense of power. When you heard people singing, people lifting their voices, it was great, unbelievable. If you're in a small church or a hall, if you're walking down the street and people just singing to the top of their voices, it was power. And it helped to free you. And I think for a lot of people, it helped to get them past that particular action, get them past maybe their sense of fear and misgiving.
This is Congressman John Lewis, who, among other things, helped change America before and is changing America now in the United States House of Representatives. Bill Russell and I are talking with him at the Commerce Club. We're going to be back in just a moment for a few more minutes with Congressman Lewis. Please do stay tuned.